Companies may find they're darned if they do and darned if they don't on Iran. I'm David Brancaccio in New York. U.S. sanctions on Iran go into effect today. President Trump pulled out of the 2015 multinational deal in May. Marketplace's Rima Kreis reports on a paradox here.
The U.S. sanctions ban Iran from buying dollars, trading in gold, steel, or automotive parts. They also punish foreign companies, many European, that trade with Iran. What's the EU countries' take on all this?
Sharply negative. They seem to be united in their opposition to what Trump is doing.
Bill Reinsch is a trade expert at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. He says the EU prefers to stick with the Iran nuclear deal and has revived a statute that blocks companies complying with the American sanctions.
If they do business in Iran, they're violating our sanctions. And if they don't do business in Iran, they'll be violating the EU's blocking statute. So they're hosed either way.
Ray Takia with the Council on Foreign Relations says most businesses would prefer to upset the EU than the U.S., go against the American sanctions, and
you will forfeit your access to the American market. Now, that's a pretty big deal.
Because the American market is so much bigger than Iran's. I'm Rima Kreis for Marketplace.
Beleaguered Wells Fargo Bank has disclosed that its mistaken calculations may have led it to wrongly deny loan modification applications for more than 600 customers, leading to about 400 customers losing their homes. The bad calculations by the bank occurred between 2010 and 2015, and the bank has set aside money to compensate those who lost out. To check the markets, the 100-share index in London is up 0.3%. For the U.S., Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are up in the 0.1% range. Crude oil is up 1.4% in New York. The dollar is up. The euro down at $1.15. Saudi Arabia says it's freezing all new business with Canada after the Canadian ambassador there criticized the arrest of a women's rights activist there. The ambassador was given 24 hours to leave the country. As a nonprofit news organization, Marketplace is able to do what we do every day thanks to funding from public radio stations, foundations, corporate underwriters, and listeners like you. Thank you to all the Marketplace investors who've contributed over the last year for helping keep public service journalism strong. All of us really appreciate your support.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Palo Alto Networks. As you innovate to transform your business in today's digital world, how do you stay secure? At Palo Alto Networks, our mission is to protect your digital way of life. Whether it's unprecedented opportunities or uncertainties with AI and whatever comes next, we continually deliver innovation to make each day safer and more secure than the one before. More at paloaltonetworks.com.
The U.S.-China rhetoric has been getting hotter. Meanwhile, U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo is facing pushback from his counterparts at the annual Southeast Asian Nations Summit in Singapore. Marketplace's China correspondent Jennifer Pak reports.
Singapore's Foreign Minister Vivian Balakrishnan says he told his American and Chinese counterparts that any trade war or unilateral sanctions will have a, quote, disproportionate impact on the city-state. And that goes for the nine other Southeast Asian countries who are part of a complex global supply chain. For example, Malaysia makes microchips, which are then assembled into finished products in China before they're shipped to the U.S. So these economies will feel the pinch if tariffs cause Chinese exports to the U.S. to fall. Southeast Asia has always had to manage a delicate balance between the U.S. and China. Economically, the region's biggest trade partner is China, but militarily, the region has relied on the U.S. to counter Chinese influence. With so much uncertainty, the Southeast Asian bloc wants to minimize the damage of a possible U.S.-China trade war and pledged to double down on trade pacts. Singapore has urged its neighbors to quickly conclude talks for a comprehensive trade agreement that includes China, Japan, South Korea, and India, but not the U.S.
Marketplace's Jennifer Pak in Shanghai. Now, today would have been Andy Warhol's 90th birthday. Yes, pop art. Yes, one of the most iconic and influential artists of the 20th century. But as we're about to learn, a pioneer in what Warhol called business art. Critic Blake Gopnik is finishing the work on a comprehensive biography of Warhol, and he came by to help us understand what Warhol had in mind with business art.
Yeah, I mean, he's best known, of course, to the general public for his Campbell soups and his Marilyn paintings. But I think his most interesting work is actually the way he created something that he called business art. And usually people see him as a sold-out artist who got other people to make his art and his only goal was to make money. Well, he declared selling out a kind of art, this thing called business art. That can seem far-fetched. You could think, well, all he wants to do is make some loot, which he did like to do. But it's weirder than that, because every time he tried to make money, he came up with totally cockamamie business plans.
Business art is not the guy with the chain stores in the mall selling oil paintings. The structure of the business was seen as a kind of work of art.
Yeah. Andy Warhol claimed the act of being a good businessman could make you a different kind of artist, a new kind of artist. But, you know, when he tried to make money, the things people accused him of doing to make money make no sense. He got involved with the Velvet Underground, a screeching band that turned their amps up to 11. To imagine that the Velvet Underground was a money-making scheme made no sense.
Oh, come on. I love the Velvet Underground. Their legacy endures, but okay, they weren't mass market.
They barely made a cent for poor Andy. Or how about the time he decided to make a perfume for sale and he called it You're In. Y-O-U apostrophe R-E-I-N. But of course, if you say it fast, what you're putting on your body is a new kind of eau de toilette called You're In.
You're In. Oh, okay, the penny just dropped. But he was trying to say something about business as well as art.
Well, that's the question. By declaring himself a business artist, he was really making a comment about business, about American business, the same way that his Campbell soups are making some kind of comment about American consumption.
I was casting about for an example, a contemporary example of business art. You know what I came up with? Elon Musk, the Tesla guy, he has this side business selling flamethrowers. There is a performance art quality to that business line.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, one of the things about Warhol is that he's vastly influential, and I would argue that his most influential idea is, in fact, the business art idea. Now, the question is Elon Musk's any good? And I would say no, it's pretty low-end art. You've got to be a great artist for these kind of ironic gestures. When you put quotes around something, people have to understand that you're putting the quotes there, and being a famous artist helps that.
Art critic Blake Gopnik also writes the blog Warholiana, and his forthcoming Warhol biography will be for the publisher Echo. Blake, thank you.
Thank you, David.
Now, it remains to be seen if sometimes tetchy Elon Musk chooses to flame Mr. Gopnik over Twitter for daring to suggest here that Musk is not a great artist. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.